History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that we really ought to listen to. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we learn a lot. One of the things we're going to learn today is being in your mid-90s is not too late to publish a book. Because our guest today has done that, Charles Bailey, 96 years old, of Fresno, California, our guest. We're going to hear about his days in the Navy during World War II aboard an attack transport. But let's go back a little further. So you were born here in the San Joaquin Valley, Kerman, California?
Yes, I was born near Kerman, California, on July the 5th, 1922.
How do you remember your childhood? What are the things that stand out to you?
I thought it was pretty pleasant considering conditions we lived in. I got along good with the neighbor kids, and we lived across the street from the Kornoffs, and I played with the Kornoff kids a lot, and I remember that's when I took my first steam bath, and I actually learned to speak a few words of Russian. But then when my dad lost his job, we had to move east to live with my mother's mother. It wasn't quite as pleasant back there because we had to live on our own. In other words, you planted what you ate and you didn't buy everything from the grocery store. We were hit by the Great Depression and the Great Drought. We had some cattle. There was no feed for them because of the drought. The government bought them up as surplus. My dad drove all of our cattle into Warsaw, the county seat. The government gave him so much for each animal, and that's how we got the money to come back to California.
And most of us have never lived through a time like that, at least not in our country. Did it feel uncertain to you, or were you too young to know any different?
I felt some uncertainty because I didn't know what is going to happen next. What will I do? Where I learned that I didn't like farming very well, so I had to think of something else. And we came back to California. I was way behind. Their standards were only 6 months a year for school. So I lost more than a year back there. And when I came out here, I was really behind. It was a 3-R school. I had arithmetic, writing, and reading. And I didn't know much. Kids were playing strange games that I didn't understand. I didn't understand baseball because back there we used trees for bases and things like that. It was pretty simple. And they played some game that they call football, and I couldn't understand that. We were hitting each other and throwing passes. But I made the adjustment and was able to get into the fifth grade.
I know this is a long time ago, but you seem to have a pretty sharp memory. So I'm curious if you can take yourself back to that fifth grader or sixth grader or seventh grader. What did you dream about? What were your ambitions? What did you say, hey, when I grow up, here's what I want to do?
I wasn't certain what I wanted to do. I wanted to get a good education, but I didn't know what I wanted to do when I got it. I just knew one thing. I don't want anything to do with farming.
Was that because your dad had you do some farm jobs and you didn't like them, or what?
Yes. When we were in Missouri, we had to run the farm the way my grandmother wanted it. And I know my dad, with his pruning shears, went out and pruned the peach trees. And my grandmother saw that. Oh, you have ruined those trees. So it wasn't too pleasant. And then I know my mother worried a lot because, well, most kids didn't even get to high school. And she was worried about our education, too. So she wanted to get out of there, although she had been born there. And my dad was glad to get out. We were all glad to get out, really.
So you came back here to the San Joaquin Valley in California with your father, your mother, and your younger brother.
Still remember, we came, I guess, the southern route, Route 66, it was originally called. By the way, my father's family were the first immigrants to use that road. And when we got to High Point, and it was just getting dark, evening, I could see those palm trees. I still remember that. That looked so good.
So you're back here, and, you know, we're getting through the 30s and on into the early 40s. What kind of things were you up to?
I guess the things boys are usually up to during those years. One hobby I developed that I spent quite a bit of time with, collecting arrowheads. A pot digger, you might call us. We're amateurs. There's some of the ones I still have. So that's one thing that I did.
Where'd you find those? I mean, you've got a nice collection of arrowheads there. How do you pick those up?
You really have to look for them. You're focused and you're looking down. Normally, you wouldn't see a lot of them. But when you go arrowhead hunting, you're looking for that. And that's how I found most of them. And there's another kid and I that did this.
So is that in the Kings River or where?
In the Osage River, most of them. Some of them are collected here. In both states, I've collected arrows.
So your mom wanted you to come back here for educational purposes. You finished high school here, and you actually went to college, right?
Yes. I finished elementary school here, graduated from Alameda Elementary School. We were in the Reedley School District, so I went to Reedley from high school, and I went 3 years to Reedley.
At this time, did you have any indication that America might be swept into a war?
None. But I was very interested in what was going on in Europe. I know the first thing that my brother and I did when we got off the bus was go to the house and turn on the radio and listen to the latest war news. Never dreaming that I would be in that war. Well, no one thought that. That was absolutely impossible. No way. The Germans aren't going to attack France with the largest army in the world, Britain with the greatest fleet. They'll never do it until the Blitzkrieg that took France out. That next to Pearl Harbor, that was probably the biggest shock. That turned everything around. Then we started thinking about war factories, drafts, a peacetime draft. Can you imagine that? We were making preparations at the time of Pearl Harbor, but we still had a long ways to go.
And by the time that happened, you were already in college. What were you studying at Fresno State?
Well, my mother thought I should take up merchandising, and I did. I didn't. I saw that that was not the thing for me because my background was in farming. I never worked in a clothing store or anything like that before, so I wasn't too interested in that. I thought I would switch over to teaching maybe. But when I looked at my teaching schedule, I didn't like some of the classes. And so I was complaining to the campus policeman there. And he said, why don't you come over and join us? So I did. That's where I got my degree.
But before you could get a degree, you had this little thing called World War II that Uncle Sam had some work for you.
I was in the Navy for 3 years. Yeah. So all the people with whom I started, they were graduating gone. That seemed there was no one at the university except veterans recently released. There was about 3 men to every woman, I think, there. Anyway, I had quite a bit of fun with criminology because we could work a few jobs and get a little money. Of course, I still had my GI, or I wouldn't have been going to college.
You know, I was struck in flipping through your book, Bell Bottom Trousers, that you had a very vivid description of what Sunday morning, December 7th, 1941, was like here in the San Joaquin Valley, complete with the fog and this mantle over the valley. What do you remember about that day, and how did you find out?
I was a freshman at Fresno State. This was near the end of the first semester for me in college. I got in kind of on probation. My grades weren't the greatest, but I did pretty well. I surprised myself. You know, I like college life. Hey, this is a lot better than high school. So we lived out in the country. So I didn't have a car. So I stayed with my uncle in town, and my mother would pick me up Monday mornings and take me to the college. So that Sunday morning, generally my mother would go to church quite often. My dad, not so often, but for one reason, he worked 6 days a week. He had only one day to work for other things. So that day, my dad said to my brother and I, "We're going to fix this pig house," for we had one sow that was about ready to deliver, so we wanted to get a good roof on it. About 11 o'clock, my brother said, "I have to go to the bathroom." He went to the house, and my mother was listening to some religious program, and all of a sudden, the program just switched. All of the stations went to the war news. And my brother came running out to where my dad and I were working and said that we're at war. He said, "The Japs have attacked Pearl Harbor." We threw down our tools and went in the house and sat in front of the radio until about midnight, I think, trying to learn what had happened. We couldn't believe it. It didn't penetrate that they would do something like that, because everything seemed to be going pretty good. We were recovering from the Depression, but this changed the whole world, of course.
I'm sure it changed your world quite a bit, too. Did you realize that at the time, that it was going to change your world?
Yes, I began to think about that. But I probably couldn't have joined anyway, because if you went to a recruiting station, they would be a line a mile long of people. So I thought, I've got time to maybe finish the second semester. But that was a disaster, because I couldn't focus on my studies. And everyone you'd meet, all we talked about was war news. We just couldn't focus. So my grades were the worst I ever got. I thought I might get kicked out if it wasn't for the war. And most of the young men were leaving, you know, different times. Oh, they got all of the first recruits in to the service until about June. That's when they thought about using the draft. Well, I got a little card in the mail telling me to go to a certain place and register for the draft. And I knew what the others were experiencing. Once you registered for the draft, you had about 2 months and you'd be gone. So I couldn't go back to college. And if I didn't do something pretty quick, I'd be in the Army. And I didn't want that at all. So I joined the Navy. And I'm glad I did.
How did your parents feel about it?
They felt I made the right decision. We were sworn in and then sent to San Diego boot camp. And it took us all day. We'd stop at stations and we'd pick up other recruits. Every time we stopped at a station, there would be ladies there with sandwiches and coffee. So I felt, this is pretty good. We were treated like kings. We finally got to San Diego. It was about 11 o'clock at night. But anyway, we had to have our first Navy lecture. One thing he warned us about, he says, the U.S. Navy is not a part of the democratic system. We would have learned that in a couple days on our own. But he informed us that we had to call him sir. We were a bunch of landlubbers and didn't know anything about that.
Well, speaking of, that question occurred to me. Had you ever in your life been on a ship before?
No. No idea what a ship was like.
Did you have an idea in your mind of the kind of ship that you wanted to end up on?
Yes. I wanted to be on a battleship or a cruiser. I even would have settled for a destroyer. But being put on a troop transport, just like the one I came over on, I was really disappointed. But that the troop ships that took us to the war zones was a civilian ship working under contract for the Navy. So we had the civilian crew, but we were in the Navy. Right after Pearl Harbor, Churchill and Roosevelt got together, and they spent almost 3 weeks planning their strategies. And they decided that they would do Europe first. Then when we finished Europe and Italy, we would go over to the Pacific and take care of Japan. But they forgot that all that time Japan would be free. It could do what she wanted to. So she began taking one island after the other. And we in the United States, I guess, thought, that was all right. We're going to get those people when we get through with Europe. We'll have a huge army. to take care of the Japanese. But the Japanese, they had practically no opposition. All they had to do was land on the island, and they started moving southward, and they captured Tulagi. So the Japanese built a sea base at Tulagi. That was mostly, we thought, for reconnaissance. But some of the natives noticed the Japanese were building a large base right across from Tulagi on the island called Guadalcanal. We still didn't think too much of it. That wasn't in our plans at all. But as they went south, their objective, of course, was to cut the supply lines between New Zealand and Australia. And when these New Zealanders and Australians, ASAC troops we call them, heard about this, they demanded action from the British. Give us some protection here, or they would fall to the Japanese. And they backed it up with a threat. If Britain didn't do something about it, they were going to bring all of their ANZAC troops home. And at the time, the Egyptian-Libyan campaign was going on, and the British had some success, but then they had to make a deal to send something else in there. Then they wanted us to do Guadalcanal, get the Japs off of there. But they found that that was not so easy because we'd already made plans for Europe. We realized that we couldn't land on France. What they needed was practice, so they decided we'll do North Africa. Supplies were still scarce. They allotted most of their supplies for the African campaign in North Africa. And they didn't want to then have to go clear across the ocean and do Guadalcanal. But we had to do it, and that's where several million of us spent the war years, from Guadalcanal, of course, to Tokyo.
And we'll hear about some of those adventures when we come back. Charles Bailey of Fresno, California, our guest today. Link to his book, Bell Bottom Trousers, at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.
With his bell bottom trousers, coat of navy blue, she loves her sailor and he loves her too.